Hi, everyone. This is Rich Lucy in the Drug Enforcement Administration's Community Outreach and Prevention Support section, and welcome to this episode of our podcast series, Prevention Profiles, Take 5. I'm really excited about today's interview, and let me introduce you to Ryan Snow and tell you a little bit about him before we get into our five questions. So Ryan serves full-time as a police officer with a large university police department where he educates the community about DUI and drug-related issues. He is a certified drug recognition expert instructor and has completed hundreds of hours of training related to drugs and the impact they have on the human body. As a police officer, Ryan has firsthand knowledge of the danger that drugs bring to communities. He has spoken at numerous national and state conferences on topics related to drugs, and he has also developed training opportunities for campuses and delivered those classes at colleges and universities across the nation. Ryan's work has been featured in webinars, newspapers, television, and educational articles. And prior to law enforcement, Ryan graduated with a bachelor's degree in education and a master's degree in educational administration. So with that, Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're really excited to get your perspective on some things that we are often exposed to, talking a little bit about prevention and law enforcement and how they connect. And we have a mutual friend. We'll bring him up during this podcast. I want to talk to you a little bit about marijuana use and also your work around being a drug recognition expert. So with that, I'm going to just jump right into our first question. So whenever I'm speaking at an event or presenting at a workshop, I'm often asked, why is a law enforcement agency, such as DEA, involved in prevention? So as a police officer, do you often get that question? And how do you respond to people wondering how law enforcement fits into the prevention picture?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, a lot of the conferences that I speak about or speak at or go to have a lot of lawyers involved, a lot of counselors and other people that are involved within the student range on the college campus of like success and things like that. And then, you know, a police officer steps up and they're like, wait a minute, what are you doing here? You know? And so we kind of have to remind people that law enforcement fits into the larger world of prevention, because oftentimes we're the first contact that students may have when they're, you know, experimenting or using any kind of a substance that may pose some risks for them in the future. And so that means we have a lot of influence on how those individuals see the world of prevention as it moves forward, just based on our first interaction with them. And so we have a lot of chance to be able to change the minds of the people that may have a preconceived notion of exactly how we are doing what we're doing. And it's not a game, you know, for us, we're not trying to trick them. And so I think, you know, that first contact with the students, trying to show them that there are people that care about them, there are resources that are out there for them that they can utilize to be able to overcome the challenges that they're facing with the drugs, because we understand that, you know, there's a lot that goes behind why somebody uses a drug or another substance, and we're trying to get to the core of that. Mm-hmm. And so in order to kind of convince them that we are there to help them, you know, wearing a uniform and a badge and a gun and the whole police, you know, thing, sometimes that's a barrier that's difficult to overcome, but we do our best to kind of get involved with that and show the other people, the other side of prevention, that we're also there to assist them in their jobs and bring people to them that do need the help so that they can provide the wonderful services that they provide daily.
Right. So you mentioned something I just picked up on, that, you know, law enforcement fits into the larger prevention picture. And you know, we've known for a long time that the most successful prevention programs are those that are comprehensive. And a lot of times people will think of that as being the continuum of prevention, treatment, recovery. But I think it also is comprehensive, can also be thought about the different stakeholders we bring to the table, of which law enforcement would be definitely one of those sectors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so in your work, I'm sure you've also experienced there are folks who welcome, you know, the police officers, law enforcement to the table with open arms, and then there are others that are probably a little bit more guarded. Has that been your experience?
Well, I mean, definitely. Everyone comes from different backgrounds, and they have different views on, you know, what the police, who the police are and how they function and what they should be doing or should not be doing. And so, you know, we have to navigate those seas, and we have to understand that, you know, for me at least, my job isn't about, you know, really hammering people and going after them and getting these people off the streets and things like that. I don't want them committing the crimes, but oftentimes that comes with education in the forefront. And
right.
So being able to gather the resources to provide the education can be just as important as, you know, catching the criminal on the back end. And you know, like I said, the substance abuse in general can be seen as a much larger issue mm-hmm. than just substance abuse. People don't typically use drugs just because they just love the drugs. They use drugs because something else is going on in their life.
Right.
And, you know, we want to find those sources of pain for them and bring them back. So
I'm going to, I think you've given me a good segue into the second question, because you mentioned it isn't always about the arrest or quote unquote putting someone away for violating a law, that many times it is more about education. So several months ago, I interviewed our mutual friend Dave Klassen on this podcast. And as you know, he is a big proponent of campus police officers using a technique called motivational interviewing as part of their interactions with students. So in that vein of education and motivational interviewing, can you talk about an instance in which you used motivational interviewing as part of your work on campus?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a case that sticks out mainly in my mind just because of the individual's reaction. We had arrested somebody for a DUI, and much to the shock of some people listening, I don't know, maybe, DUI can cover lots of different substances. It's not just alcohol. It can be drugs as well. And so this individual had actually been huffing dust off, or duster, from like the keyboard cleaner type duster.
Hmm.
And that substance gives you a very brief high, and it can also make you lose consciousness. So the individual actually lost consciousness and was involved in a motor vehicle crash, where we had contact with this individual and then ended up arresting them for the DUI crime. And so when I went back and I was doing the paperwork for that incident, there's quite a bit of paperwork that goes along with the DUI crime. And so I'm writing out all the paperwork, and the individual was just sitting in front of me, totally silent. And I got to the very end, and I had finished all my paperwork, and I said, hey, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to just talk to you real quick before we transport you over to the county facility for bonding purposes. And she goes, yeah, sure, go ahead. And, you know, I said, I really just want to talk to you a little bit about the substance that you were using and why you were using it and that type of stuff. And so she started talking to me, and probably 2-3 minutes into the interview, I just asked her very simply, why do you think you use this, and what does this give you?
Hmm.
And she started just crying hysterically. And I was like, oh my gosh, did I say something wrong? Or did I, you know, and she looks up at me and she says, I asked her, why are you crying? And she looks up at me and she said, no one has ever cared enough about me to ask me that question.
Hmm.
And it was like this, you know, light bulb moment for me
mm-hmm.
to see this college student in front of me, where no one has ever asked her why she uses the substance. She just, you know, it just broke my heart.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, I wanted to help her and show her that people do care, and
mm-hmm.
she had never even experienced that before. And I don't even know how long, you know, she had been using the drug for approximately 2 years up to that point. And so for me being the first person to ever ask her that just broke my heart.
So Ryan, in that situation, once you kind of got past that initial emotional kind of breakthrough, was there still a little bit more of a conversation that you had about the consequences of the use or why she was using that? You know, was the more of the motivational interviewing piece before you got to the, you know, the consequences part of the situation?
Yeah, I kind of went down the path of, you know, obviously that hit a chord with her. Like, that affected her immensely that somebody cared enough about her. So I kind of went down that path a little bit, and we talked a little bit about her family, her upbringing, her friendship, relationships within college experience, mm-hmm. and how she didn't feel like she had many friends on college campuses and things like that. And then I provided her some resources to possibly get involved in some more things on the college campus to try to meet more people and things like that. And then we talked about how the use of huffing and the drug might impact her ability to succeed with those activities. And she kind of came full circle for her, because she backed around to, if I continue to do this, then I won't be able to get involved in some of the clubs and do some of the things on the college that I want to in order to make the friends that I really, really want.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to kind of circle back around and come to that conclusion. And she really seemed to be picked up on it very well.
Great. And the fact that you were equipped with resources to provide to her, I think was really important. And there was another thing that you mentioned as, you know, kind of the crux of this, the drug that she was using, and I just want to mention it without getting too far off on a tangent, but the fact that she was huffing, you know, which essentially is inhalant use, we rarely hear or talk about that among the college student population. It's, you know, inhalant use, you know, really seems to be, without minimizing it, among the college student population, really seems anchored kind of in the middle school range, you know, when we talk about inhalant use. But is that something that, you know, in your work that maybe not a large preponderance of students are huffing, but is it something that you've encountered before?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of odd, some of the different populations that get into that. And so, like, with huffing or inhalant use, it's very popular in, like, the club drug type section.
Right.
It's very quick high. You're at the club. You can do it very quickly and then move on and that type of things, and it won't affect the rest of your night for a lot of the people that are using that. But I also have found numerous times that the international student population, will come over and actually get involved in huffing and inhalant use first, because it's legal in order to buy the items that you need.
Right.
And so they can get involved in the, you know, the substance abuse scene without actually breaking the law per se to just buy those items. And so they feel kind of like this, I'm doing okay, like I'm not doing anything wrong when I buy this, mm-hmm. but I'm still getting, you know, intoxicated. And a lot of them have expressed that they do that because they're trying to escape the, you know, the anxiety and the stress that they're feeling coming from a different country into America to go to school, and they're trying to use the substance to escape that anxiety and stress.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that that through you telling us this story of this one case that you had about huffing, it gives us, you know, we're taking notes, of course, during these interviews, and I think that we'll look into some new stories or resources that we can make available on campusdrugprevention.gov around this huffing issue, just so, you know, people are aware of it actually is happening on college campuses, maybe not at the prevalence of some of the other more popular, you know, drugs that you would think of. But I think it's important for people to be educated about it. So I'm glad that we were able to talk about it here. I'm going to switch us to our third question, which does deal with a drug that is very well known and gets talked about a lot. And I'm speaking about marijuana. We could probably do an entire episode on the various consequences, whether they're physical, academic, legal, social consequences of marijuana use. So many people think marijuana use is harmless, And I understand from your work that you have a story that shows it is not harmless. So would you mind telling us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So without going into too much detail about it, we had a student that was involved in very low level dealing, basically. And so from our understanding, the student came into the world of marijuana as a very low-time user of the drug, just occasionally kind of a thing, and then somebody approached that individual as a kind of an invitation, hey, if you sell a little bit for me, then you can basically, you know, not have to front the money for your own use of the drug. Mm-hmm. And he thought that that was a decent idea, and he could do that. And so he was selling just a very low-level amount of cannabis on or near campus. And so he got involved with a couple individuals that wanted to rob him of the drugs and their cash back, basically. Mm-hmm. And so they set up a drug deal with this individual for a very, very low amount of cannabis, less than an ounce, and met with him and tried to rob him. And when he was being robbed, he got very scared, as normal, as you would, I guess, if you were being robbed, and the individuals had a gun. And so when they pointed the gun at him, he got very scared. He tried to jump out of a vehicle, and I think they probably got caught up in the emotion of the incident as well and ended up shooting him in the back of the head and killing him over less than an ounce of marijuana and a very low-level amount of money, less than $100. And they then had to, you know, go through the process of trying to get rid of his body and trying to cover up the crime and all this other stuff. They were ended up being caught and actually went to prison for quite a few number of years, but that still didn't take away the pain that the community felt from the loss of the individual.
Right.
And you know, the impact that it had on the campus community as well as the surrounding community, that an individual was murdered over just a small amount of cannabis and money. It just was very sad.
Yeah, and we're always careful in, you know, the work that we do and presentations we give. We never want to overgeneralize, you know, the situation or statements. But I think that, you know, by and large, people think that the more dangerous, if you will, drug deals would involve, typically people will think of cocaine and heroin and meth. And I don't think that they would immediately think about marijuana, a transaction, if you will, deal being being a dangerous situation. But you've illustrated something that started out as probably a typical, I know that's also a word we don't want to generalize, but a typical type deal that just went completely wrong very quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I think that is an example of how, you know, even with all the different things that are happening in our states with whether it's medical marijuana, but more specifically recreational marijuana and such, and what states are doing and passing legislation, and oftentimes the general public thinking that marijuana use is a fairly harmless, innocuous use, your case there illustrates how that it does have some serious, and that's the ultimate end of the spectrum, serious consequences.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's obviously an extreme case, but that also happened in a town or a college campus atmosphere where people oftentimes, you know, we call it a college campus bubble, where people feel like once they're inside that bubble, they're completely safe and all crime goes away. And, you know, we don't have those types of instances, but that really proved to people like, wow, this can happen and it can happen here.
Right.
And so we need to start developing, you know, different ways of trying to talk about this.
Right. Yeah, and how many times have we heard that, you know, you just don't, these types of things don't happen, quote unquote, here, right? I mean,
yeah.
And the next thing you know, it has happened there. And then, then they have to kind of look at it in a different way. So thank you for telling us that particular story, which, as you said, is really kind of the extreme side, but I think it is illustrative of the fact that, you know, connection to marijuana is not the harmless situation that people think that it might be. So I want to move on to our next question. And so I mentioned in introducing you that you are a certified drug recognition expert instructor. Can you tell us, tell our listeners specifically, what is a drug recognition expert, first of all, and then how might our listeners collaborate with them either on their campus or in their surrounding communities?
So this has been one of those things that I've been kind of talking about for a while, and every time I talk about it, you know, if I say, does anyone know if I'm doing a presentation, does anybody know if any DREs are on your campus or in your area? And everyone just kind of looks at each other like, I have no idea what a DRE is. I'm very happy to get this program out there because I think it is a fantastic program. It is doing so much to remove impaired motorists off our roadways, save people's lives in many cases through identifying medical needs and things like that. And so I'm a very, very big proponent of this program. But I got involved in the Drug Recognition Expert program a couple years back. And what it is it provides law enforcement officers with advanced training, like super advanced training, on gathering or getting people off the roadways that may be impaired due to substances such as alcohol or other drugs. And specifically the other drug category comes into play here. And so when we talk about the different levels of education through the impaired motorist spectrum, basically every officer will go through a 24-hour training that's provided by NHTSA. To identify impaired motorists off the roadway. And so I call that kind of like the bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And then there's an advanced program. It's a two-day course that is designed to teach law enforcement officers more about like the drug side of the DUI or DWI laws and pull them off the roadway. And that's called ARIDE, or Advanced Roadside Impaired Detection Enforcement. And then we have basically that's, you know, that's your master's level, but the PhD, the one that is really dives into the use of the drugs and impairment, is the DRE program, the Drug Recognition Expert program, and that's your PhD level of training when it comes to impaired motorists. And they teach lots and lots about how drugs impair the human body, what kind of impact the different drugs provide to the body, and then the tests that we go through to try to understand, hey, if I do this test and I see this reaction, it will more likely be that this person's under the influence of this type of or category of drug. And so the long and short, I guess, of it is if I can do about a 30 to 45 minute battery of tests to an individual, and at the end of that group of tests, I'll be able to say, with fairly good accuracy here, I'm upwards of 90% right now accuracy, that the person is under the influence of some type of a stimulant. So I may not be able to say that they're under the influence of cocaine or they're under the influence of methamphetamine, but I'll be able to say it's some type of stimulant. And
so
then
it's
likewise,
a class of drug that
I'd be able
you're,
to do the same for the total of the seven drug categories across the board. And so, you know, and as well as like legal type substances that unless you ingest them the correct way, they wouldn't impair you. And so like inhalants is one of the categories. And so I wouldn't be able to necessarily identify the substance in which they were inhaling, but I'd be able to identify that as the category of the drug that they were using and be able to point that towards their impairment, which is great for not only impaired driving cases, but also other cases that we run across. Obviously, on the college campus, you know, if we want to see if somebody's been using marijuana or been smoking marijuana, you know, a lot of the officers kind of just have a hunch or they're going off the odor alone, but I can go in and do a couple tests to the students and actually kind of tell them, you know, with certainty, hey, I know that you've been consuming cannabis based on the facts that your body is doing this, 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 and this. And then oftentimes the students are more likely to talk to me at that point because they're kind of like, you know, shoot, he knows.
Right. So, and I'm glad you mentioned NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, because that was my first exposure to learning about the DRE, you know, early on in my federal career. So for our listeners, I would think, again, being very careful not to overgeneralize, but, you know, probably for campuses where there is a higher prevalence, say, of driving situations, maybe your rural schools, for example, where, you know, transportation, getting around by car and such, there may be a higher prevalence of the possibility of impaired driving. This might be a situation where having DREs involved in their prevention efforts would be a real plus.
Absolutely. And the other good part about DREs is they're so on top of the knowledge of the drugs and the drug trends that they can kind of help campuses understand what may be coming to them. And so then they can kind of gear their prevention efforts into stopping some of those trends before they even hit their college campuses.
That's an excellent point. And so it's kind of, I just heard it's almost like a twofer. So you'd actually have the DRE involved in what they've been fully and intensively trained for, which is kind of the roadside battery of tests and such like that. But you're getting to a point where it's even more just about education about drug trends in general, which, you know, as we continue to, you know, hone our own craft and learn our science, this would be another good reason to bring these experts in.
Absolutely. I mean, you honestly, you may be able to say that that's one of the largest reasons why I'm here today doing this.
That's excellent, and I'm glad that you brought it up. So for our listeners, there's just one more, if you haven't thought about it, another expert or type of individual to bring to the table or even bring in for a session if you're holding a conference or a symposium for either your campus or your community. So Ryan, thank you for talking to us about the DREs. So to wrap up, I'm going to move to our fifth and final question. And it comes back to prevention and law enforcement and that connection. You know, in the prevention field, we've known for a long time that collaboration is key to an effective drug abuse prevention strategy. So what would be your takeaway advice to our listeners on how best to engage law enforcement personnel in their prevention efforts?
One of the biggest things that I always talk to our prevention people on our campus or on other campuses about is please just ask. Mm-hmm. Ask law enforcement to be involved in that process. You probably will be completely shocked at what kind of resources or help or information that law enforcement can actually bring to the table when we're talking about prevention efforts in general. But oftentimes law enforcement, there's kind of this feeling like people don't really want us until they need us. And so I want to get out there and I want to talk to people and I want to be involved with the different groups and I want to help with prevention efforts and things like that. But you also kind of feel like that guy that wasn't really invited to the party that just kind of showed up hoping to make friends. I want people to understand that just asking us to be involved will give us such a lift and, hey, this is great. Like, they truly want us there. They want us to be involved. And we can bring in so many different aspects because, really, when you think about law enforcement, I'm just going out and talking to people all day long. That's all I'm doing is making connections. And so whether that be with people that, are also on campus that can kind of bring in some resources and help for us, or whether that's people, actual people that are involved with using the specific substances and maybe talking to them and getting it kind of almost like an inside scoop on what they're using and why they're using it and where they're getting it, and things like that, we can really start to steer some of the prevention efforts into a successful, mission.
So I, during all of the podcast interviews, we try to come up with the simple takeaway message, kind of the soundbite, and I think you've totally given us one in your response here, which was as simple as please just ask. You know, with this issue of being proactive, I wrote down also what you mentioned, which is to involve us before you need us, which I think is also a great kind of message. And please, I would ask you to chime in on this. For our listeners who are law enforcement personnel, my mentor, I've mentioned Fran Harding many, many times on previous podcasts, and you know, we would talk to different sectors, and sometimes you have to invite yourself to the table. And if the community for some reason doesn't think to ask you, so I think the flip side of please just ask is sometimes, you know, please just, you know, I think the flip side is the law enforcement personnel also need to just simply ask, can I come to your meeting?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Ryan, I really have appreciated, all of your insights and your perspective today during the interview. I think that in the year and a half that we've been doing the podcast series, I think you are our first current police officer that's currently working on a university campus. We've had others who have been involved who are either maybe have been involved in associations and such. So getting your perspective as kind of boots on the ground, if you will, from your perspective is really enlightening, and I trust that our listeners will feel that as well. So thank you so much for being part of the podcast today.
Yeah, I cannot thank you guys enough for just allowing me that opportunity to be a part of it. And I just humbly accept it, of course. And I hope this thing goes everywhere and we can impact a lot of people. So thank you.
Yeah, well, we have a very large subscriber base to the website, which we are very happy about. And so once we do post the podcast interview, it will be broadly disseminated. And actually, the interview content has given us some ideas for potential news stories and resources to post online. So we thank you for that as well.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
So for our listeners, hopefully you also got some real concrete takeaways from my interview today with Ryan, and that'll help simply support you even further in the work that you're doing on campus and in communities to prevent drug abuse among college students. So with that, to our listeners, I will say thanks for listening and have a great day.